allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let us extend our thoughts in union as we work to enrich the lives of our residents. Let our deliberations be free of rancor, filled with the concern of others rather than ourselves. Let us plan beyond the obvious, that we might protect our neighbor from the unintended consequences of shallow thought. Let us remember we are the people's servant, not they ours. Let us proceed in peace.
Good morning. I would like to call this morning's Tuesday, January 19th, adjourned September meeting to order. May I have a roll call, please?
Ms. Sussage.
She was
present.
There she is.
Mr. DeBolt.
Yes.
Ms. Flowers.
Present.
Mr. Gangler.
Here.
Ms. Gilmore.
Here.
Mr. Greider.
Here.
Mr. Kellogg.
Yes.
Mr. Kokel.
Here.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Here.
Ms. Vickers.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. With the quorum being present, may I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Second.
By Gilmore, seconded by Gangler. Roll call.
Ms. Sussage.
Yes.
Mr. DeBolt.
Yes.
Ms. Flowers.
Aye.
Mr. Gangler.
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore.
Yes.
Mr. Greider.
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg.
Yes.
Mr. Kokel.
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Yes.
Ms. Vickers.
Yes.
All eyes, thank you. Special recognition, could I have a motion to approve the resolution declaring February 4th, 2021 as World Cancer Awareness Day?
So move.
Seconded by Kokel, seconded by DeBolt. Mr. Kokel, would you care to read this resolution for?
No, I'll let you do it, Mr. Right. Chairman.
Whereas hundreds of families across Kendall County have been affected by many different types of cancer, and patients continue to face many unique challenges, including emotional and physical demands of continual treatment. And whereas World Cancer Day was established on February 4th, 2000 at the World Cancer Summit Against Cancer for the New Millennium, which was held in Paris, France. And whereas World Cancer Day is an international day observed on February 4th each year to promote research, improve patient services, raise awareness of cancer, and encourage its prevention, detection, and treatment, and targets misinformation, raises awareness, and reduces stigma. And whereas the primary goal of World Cancer Day is to significantly reduce illness and death caused by cancer, and is an opportunity to rally the international community to end the injustice of preventable suffering from cancer. And whereas World Cancer Day is observed by the United Nations, and whereas cancer affects all races and socioeconomic classes, and is the leading cause of deaths in the United States, and now therefore be it resolved by the Kendall County Board that the Board declares February 4th, 2021 as World Cancer Awareness Day. Be it further resolved that the citizens of Kendall County are urged to become informed and aware of breast cancer and to support funding for programs to reduce barriers to breast cancer screening, detection, and treatment for all women, presented and adopted by the County Board this 19th day of January 2021. Roll call.
Mr. DeBolt.
Yes.
Ms. Flowers.
Aye.
Mr. Gangler.
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore.
Yes.
Mr. Greider.
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg.
Yes.
Mr. Kokel.
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Yes.
Ms. Vickers.
Yes.
Ms. Sussage.
Yes.
All eyes, thank you. Public comment. Consent agenda, may I have a motion to approve?
Seconded
by Gilmore, seconded by Gangler. Roll call.
Ms. Flowers.
Aye.
Mr. Gangler.
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore.
Yes.
Mr. Greider.
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg.
Yes.
Mr. Kokel. Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sussage?
Yes.
Mr. DeBolt?
Yes.
9-1.
Motion carries 9-1. Yes. Oh. Did you need some?
Me?
Oh. Old business? New business? elected official reports and other department reports. Sheriff, I know you may have some things on your mind this morning.
My report should have been, the year-end report should have been in your folder for, or your packet for review. Just to hit on a couple highlights, the calls for service, we were up about 850 this year compared to last year, and I'll go year to year, which averages out to about 69 a month. Our police reports, we were up about 90 for the entire year. Total arrests, we were down 75. Traffic contacts, we were down 2,400. Traffic citations, we were down 140. DUI arrests were up by 11 for the year. Other highlights, obviously the sheriff's sale, or the sales conducted were way down. We were at 38 this year. There was 90, or we were down 90 from last year. Paper service was only down about 300. Subpoenas, FOIA requests were up 700. Civil process fees were down 15,000. Sheriff sales were down 66,000. Records fees and bond processing fees were about the same. Amount invoiced for inmates housed from other county jurisdictions, we were up 70,000. And amount invoiced to the feds, we were down 56,000, but it's a net gain of about 14,000. And that's probably about it. On the correction side, we were down. We're at 97.7% of the budget expended. But in the patrol side, we were up by 0.8. And the reason for that was because there's a contract settled. And so there was the monies weren't in that part of the budget. They were actually in the contingency fund. But I don't believe a transfer was done. So we just came in just slightly above. And if we remember the civil unrest back at the end of May, we spent about $30,000 in 8 days in overtime. So overall, I thought it was a good year, budget-wise. And considering with COVID, I was surprised to see some of the numbers. I knew we'd be down in traffic stops because we really weren't doing a lot of traffic unless it was a necessity. So I'd be able to hopefully answer any questions you may have.
I do have a question for you, Sheriff, but it's not on your report.
Pardon?
I do have a question for you, but it wasn't on the report. Were you going to go into detail on the House bill?
I put out a Facebook post in general terms, what I thought was good in the bill, and I laid out a couple scenarios. I still have not gone over the entire bill, so it would be, I wouldn't want to comment on it until I've had a chance to review it in its entirety and play out some scenarios. These were just some low-hanging fruit that was put out there before. I don't know how people read 764 pages in 50 minutes and vote on something, but you know, I'm a public education child, so I have no idea.
Yeah, Mr. Coco.
Thank you for the report. Just to bring me back up to speed on things, do we still house your, from the federal prisoners and stuff, do you still have that program going, and is that going, give me a 1 minute on that.
Got those on the phone, can't hear.
I know, I dropped off internet. Give me a second.
Yes, a few years ago we started housing federal inmates. In fact, we're in our second contract with the U.S. Marshal's Office for housing them. This year was slower than last year. However, I was surprised to see it was only by around 56,000 what we invoiced. They usually pay a little bit, you know, behind, but that's what we invoiced for the fiscal year. It's worked out well. Our average daily population this past year was 82, and I'm sorry I don't have it, the numbers in front of me, but it won't vary that much. I want to say maybe it was like 84. So we started off the year, we were up in the high 90s, and a couple times we even hit about 100 just from the feds. And then with COVID, it kind of dropped down. We were between 84 and 75, 74 for the rest of the year. Our other outside inmates we house for once in a while, we get Kane or DuPage. Mainly it's Cook County, and they're only the ones that are in protective custody. We no longer do the general population inmates, and that's worked out well. I know Eric's office is happy with that change.
Thank you.
Eric, I know you'll be speaking in a moment as well, but did you, as long as Sheriff's up there, did you have anything you wanted to add on HB 3683 or 3863? Okay. Yeah, that's fine. Okay. All right, Sheriff. Thank you. County Clerk and Recorder, Debbie.
My revenue report is in the packet. I've also included an annual report. Just like to point out that there are a couple increases in some of our things that we do, the marriage licenses. We actually did more because of COVID. We were one of the only counties still in the area that were issuing marriage licenses. Other county clerk's offices closed, so we're not able to issue them, but we continue to do that. We recorded more documents in the recording department over last year. I believe that was due to interest rates being so good. On the clerk side, we had the state board, the Illinois State Archives come in and take all of our old minute books from 1841 to 1992. Those were the only copies that the county had, so I had them come in. They took the books, they scanned them, they put them on a zip drive, and now they are stored down with the archives at the state as well as at NIU. And then we do have a copy of the little thumb drive that is in the safe here at the county. So if anything were to happen to the building, at least those records would be secure. We're going to look into doing some other things like that with our old birth certificates, where we just have paper copies and are looking to make sure that those are preserved in case something does happen.
Are we able to put those on the website for access?
When we get time.
Well, it would
that
seem
is
like
a goal.
Scott could probably easily upload a thumb drive, couldn't you?
Yeah.
We'll talk about that later. like I said, the recording office, they did do more documents during last year. We also added the piece of property law.
I'm having a hard time hearing Debbie.
We received over $200,000 in grants for the election, so I did want to point that out. But that's all. If anybody has any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer.
Thanks, Debbie. Treasurer. No one from the treasurer's office. Clerk of the court. He's in attendance, but no report. State's attorney, Mr. Weiss.
We've all been anxiously awaiting the year-end report. You just got it via email. Sorry, there was a little problem with the internet, so I just sent it out for you to review. It is in your email. Was trying to save paper this year, and of course that's the day it goes down. So just a couple things I want to highlight, and I would like to make a couple comments to follow up on Sheriff Baird's remarks regarding what was House Bill 163 and then changed a couple times to different numbers. But obviously we had some challenges this year with COVID, dealing with how we maintain a court system and maintain trying to move cases along while trying to also maintain the safety of our staff as well as those participants that come into the courtrooms, attorneys and everything else that goes on. So it's been an interesting year, and as Debbie mentioned, the election was a challenge, obviously for Debbie's office, but also in providing legal advice on things that hadn't come up in the past. This was a very challenging year. So our numbers, surprisingly, were not as down as much.
Can you expound on that? I know that I don't think the board maybe fully understands the involvement that the state's attorney had during the election.
Sure.
Maybe you're going to get to that anyway. But
yep. Nope. That's I'll actually skip ahead. If you go to page 3, you'll look at the number of times that we are requested to provide legal advice in our civil division to either elected officials, department heads, or obviously to the county board itself. Regarding a variety of issues. And if you go to paragraph 4 on that page, We had over 624 requests for legal advice, which was almost 100 more than we had last year. Obviously, some of that was due to COVID. What can we do? What should we do? How do we handle employee issues, leave, those type of things? Or, you know, we're asked HR questions. What gets on the agenda? Yes. What doesn't get on the agenda? How it gets on the agenda? But also with this year, we had a lot of questions with Debbie's and going back and forth in a great way to make sure that the election process was following the law. In court, it'd be kind of fun. And this year, obviously, with the changes going into effect on a short notice basis with no prior experience of doing this, with people telling our office and I'm sure Debbie's office, this is how it should be done, and that's not actually what the law says. We had a lot of a time spent making sure that we were complying. We were dealing with that on a regular basis. We were getting emails, you know, two or three times a day, and I know Debbie was getting three or four times that amount per day trying to deal with those. So it was a very interesting process, one that I hope we don't repeat again as far as how it works, that we've got the bugs worked out if we're going to continue down this process, that issue is resolved. But there were so many issues. I'm hoping the clerk's offices from across the state can express their concerns on how to fix those issues going forward. So I'll let Debbie talk about that a little more if she has any additional comments about the election. But it does create additional work for our office. And again, each one of those requests can take hours or days sometimes to fill that request. Not all of them do, but to get the answer back on something that hasn't even been used before in the past. So, but going back to the report, as I mentioned, our numbers are not as down as much as I anticipated. As Sheriff Baird indicated, you know, traffic stops almost came to a halt during the first part of the COVID shutdown, which obviously if traffic stops are not being made, drunk drivers aren't being arrested, people aren't going to jail, other crimes aren't being looked into, when those arrests are made, the numbers tend to go down. But we did see that our felony numbers were not down nearly as much as I anticipated them to be. Realistically, it was almost like a negligible amount when you look at the numbers. And if you factor COVID for probably two of those months, we were right where we should have been. So some of the other numbers are down. One of them that I do want to point out, because I know people will ask about it, if not the county board, the press will definitely ask, is abuse and neglect cases are nearly doubled. That's not because we've had more abuse and neglect cases in the county. DCFS is now reporting them to us and must get them cleared through us before they can close their case. That was not the case last year and years prior. So those cases were not coming to our office. And so now we are filing those cases that should have been filed in the past. So I don't want you to think, wow, we've got this huge increase in abuse and neglect cases. It's realistically that DCFS was not bringing those cases directly to us. They were dealing with those cases internally. And with some of the issues that they've had across the state, they've made a change in how they are dealing with them. And if you look at other counties, you go to Kane County, I know their numbers were nearly doubled as well. I believe it was DeKalb as well. Those numbers went up significantly because of how DCFS is now bringing them to us to have us file them. So again, I don't want people to panic, but there has been basically a change in how those are handled. You go to page two, and again, I'll just go briefly through this real quick. Most of this is the same as it's been in the past. We did actually do 10 jury trials this year, which was very interesting to do a trial with COVID, where you're maintaining your distance and you're wearing masks and you're separating everyone out, but yet having a jury to deliberate, witnesses being called, cross-examination, so it was technology. I do want to thank Jim's staff for making accommodations in, you know, the jury assembly room and the courtrooms, trying to make those as COVID-free as possible. Given the circumstances, but we were able to do that, and it was only three less than we did the year before. So, four of our jury months were actually canceled this year. So, whenever this picks back up, we're allowed to do trials again. We're going to be busy again. So, I don't see that going away for the next couple of years. I already mentioned some of the other stuff, we have been doing our normal trainings that we continue to do, our roll call trainings. We're obviously slowed down this year because of not going there, but we still do our courtroom in-house training, which is kind of supplementing that and doing that, what we call our court day, key day training. So officers once a month get at least a 15-minute training on what the hot topic is for that month so we can address it right away. So other than that, obviously we've had some other things going on, and one of our person that is here, as I've mentioned before, with Leslie and the collective bargaining units, we did ratify 7 collective bargaining agreements this year. Again, I always like to mention this because I don't bring in revenue. I don't have a line item for monies that we can justify, but this year we saved about $160,000 in attorney fees, and that's a very, very conservative number at the cost as well as the amount of hours that she spent on those cases and those agreements and being at board meetings and all those other things. But that would have been outside counsel we would be paying to do that. So you're probably looking at, I know she's very modest about it, but we're probably looking at actually double that amount. So we've been able to save the county that money over the years. Plus, you get the fact you get that person's here all the time, and it's one person that goes to those bargaining units. They know her, she knows them, and you have a comfort level as well. So hopefully she gets a little break. She's only got one left with highway. So
Mr. Kellogg had a question, if you
yes.
might.
I was going to follow. As you talk about the mental health court, mm-hmm. are you pleased with the progress? I know things take time to set up and develop, but you know, the board that was in session when we started this was very adamant about helping you get that going. So I was just curious.
We are in, I'd like it to be up and running already. And obviously we're waiting on the state. All the thing we're waiting for right now is state certification so we can start that process. Okay. I don't want to say anything bad about the state, but I would hope they could move it along as quickly as possible so we can get that up and running. We have several defendants who are waiting to go into that program. And as we sit here, the longer we wait, obviously they're not getting the treatment that they need at that point. So as soon as we get the okay from the state, it will be up and running.
Okay, I guess let us know. And, you know, we've got a lobbyist that could do some digging and look into things if that is prudent. I don't know how it works with the legal.
I don't want to push them because I don't want them to, you know, think we're trying to be a pain. But obviously as fast as we can get that done through AOIC and get that going, the better off the county will be. So, yeah, I appreciate that. And I appreciate the board's support. It is a thing that I feel very strongly about. Obviously, having come to the board in the past and the board committing the monies to do so. So I hope it will be a successful program. But when we definitely have some people ready for that program and ready to get going. So,
yeah.
We also started our domestic violence response team. And I put some numbers in there, and this is on page 4. That has turned out, again, it's very new. It's only the first year. I don't have all the statistical data to show whether our cases are more successfully prosecuted or not, because again, most of the cases they worked on, they didn't go to trial yet. But if you look at the number of cases, we had 170 cases where contact was made with 141 of those victims, which is a pretty impressive number when you think about the number of cases that come through that not every domestic battery or violence victim wants to have contact with us or law enforcement. So when you look at that, we were able to get people into counseling. I want to thank the health department. I know Rain's here as well for providing staff for that and for some of the housing assistance and other things that we don't usually think about with domestic violence. We're very helpful in getting that done. And Michelle's been a great Michelle Hawley from the health department has been a great asset to be a part of that. So again, things you don't see all the time, things that go on behind the scenes. Now, additionally, does she work with our drug court and work with our child advocacy center as one of the interviewers, but obviously that partnership has helped with our domestic violence response team as well. So drug court is up and running and has been very successful. You know, we're fortunate that we have that program. We're fortunate also that we don't have as many of the numbers as other counties, and I think that's just a testament that you know, we're able to address issues before they get issues. But when they have those issues, we have a program that allows us to get them into treatment. So other than that, you know, we started our Facebook page. That's been under, you know, construction for a while. We finally got that up and running, did some videos this year. Going to try to get some other videos out to explain what the court system does so people don't have nearly the fear that it was. So, again, we were under budget. I know that's what Mr. Kellogg always likes to hear. And again, with COVID, I thought that was a very nice thing. So, if you have any questions about that, then I do have a couple comments about the legislation. But are there any questions about the report? Happy to answer them. Happy to answer them privately if you have questions down the road.
I have a question, but it may be more for the sheriff. But with respect to the moratorium on evictions and whatnot, have you heard any more on what might happen there?
I have not. I can, if the sheriff has anything additional.
Sorry to interrupt your presentation.
I know we did an eviction last week, so they have opened up, but they're still in line. Okay. And I don't know if they're going to recant that or not, because we actually had trouble filling one of the evictions, right?
Yeah, they're on a case-by-case basis,
depending
on some of the circumstances
presented in court. It's on a case-by-case basis based on some of the circumstances presented in court.
Do you anticipate, because of the moratorium that's been in place, that could create additional staffing issues for you this year?
Yeah, we're already down, I think, 4 or 5 patrol deputies right now. We have some retirements coming up. They're usually paid for and hired back by the landlord. We just have to try to find people to fill those requests.
Thank you. Mr. Keppel?
But on an eviction note, there was in CURES 2 or the omnibus bill or whatever you want to call it, there was a lot of money in there for rental assistance. Direct funding will be going to counties with 200,000 or more citizens, so we will not be getting direct funding. But in that, there should be a program stood up by the state of Illinois that could help out Kendall County residents possibly. And from my understanding, although it's not officially written or finished yet today, there are instances where some back rent could be awarded in this, not just future rent, that hopefully would reduce the burden of those evictions. And I believe the renter needs to be the one filling out the paperwork, but the money goes directly to the landlord. As we find out more information about that, I'll share it as much as possible when the state stands up that program. So there's a hope that maybe some of it can be avoided, too.
Thank you. Ms. Gilmore.
I'd like to ask a question, Mr. Keppel. Is there a name for that program that you're talking about?
The program doesn't exist yet. I've been told it's going to come through the state of Illinois, and maybe our housing authority will have more information about it when it becomes available. I do know there was money specifically set aside by the federal government to help with rental assistance, and you had to, if you were a larger county, you had to sign up, I believe it was like last Monday or Tuesday, with the federal government. You had to register to get your allotment, but for smaller counties, the state of Illinois will be running the program similar in a way that they did for business loans, and that, like Kane, got direct money, whereas we had to, our businesses had to go through the state.
Okay, thank you.
Back to you.
Oh, I like the eviction questions much better. I don't have to answer them.
I've got the housing president. I could have him come
perfect
up and say
right there. So, the last thing I did mention at the end, and I do want to thank Rayanne and also Amal, her predecessor, for that the relationship that we have with the health department when it comes to sharing of services. Our Child Advocacy Center did a great job this year trying to do interviews with small children while actually being COVID conscious. Is very difficult. I mean, you can't, we walk in here, put a mask on, it's one thing, but when you're interviewing a 4 or 5 or 6 year old who's been through a trauma and the person comes all masked up and gowned up, it doesn't really give a warm, friendly environment. So, I mean, there's some risks that our interviewers take in doing that. We've had to change some of our protocol, but we were still able to do, several interviews during that time frame. Not as many as we had in the past, but we've done over 1,100 interviews since the CAC became a standalone. That's a great testament to the people that work over there as well. So I know they've been training a new interviewer with Jason Andrade leaving the health department. So we have a new interviewer that's been trained. But I just want to let you know, a lot of these things you don't see, you don't hear about because they don't make the news until something goes wrong. And we haven't had things go wrong, so you don't hear about those things. But I want to let you know that those things are out there and that collaboration is very important to how we are able to do our job. So just to let you know. So unless there are any other questions, I do have a couple comments on the legislation. No? So I'm not going to be as politically correct as Sheriff Baird was. Sorry, Dwight. But I'm on the Illinois State's Attorneys Association Board of Governors, which I, first time in a long time, I was picked for that spot. Normally, because I avoid that issue, I try to stay out. I was actually on vacation when I got voted on. I think they did it to punish me. But I learned a lot about how these processes work, maybe more than I wanted to know. And I can tell you this, whether you're for or against the bill, should not be the first question you ask. The first question you should ask is, why did it happen the way it did? And how is that best for the state of Illinois? And you can put a title on anything. You can call it the police reform bill or the criminal justice reform bill, because then it makes it hard for people to say no to. Well, are you against police reform? Are you against criminal justice reform? Well, you can put lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig. Sorry, Matt, used to that one. But we all went to the same public education school, so I think we can use the same one. How you can possibly take what should take months of debate, discussions, dialogue, and jam it into a couple day, 700 page bill that changes moment by moment and expect that to be the best for the state of Illinois is absurd. I was on those calls, those Saturday morning Zoom hearing calls for 4 hours listening to this and talking about portions of the bill and debating portions of a bill that actually weren't even in writing yet. And people would ask that question, well, where's that in the bill? Well, it's not in there yet, but we're going to put that in there too. How is that good government? Again, there are things that need to be changed in the criminal justice system. Everybody would agree with that. There's things we can do better. There's things our office can do better. There's things the sheriff's office, police, the court system. But to do it this way is not the way that things should be done. And again, if you don't support it, you're against the criminal justice reform, or you're against police reform. And what it does, and I've talked to several victims, I've talked to victim groups, I've talked to law enforcement, I've talked to state reps and state senators, I've talked to more people than I care to know about this process because it was important to us. At the end of the day, I've talked to other states, we're gonna go to work. Whatever the bill is, we're gonna go do our job. The people that are gonna suffer are the people that are the victims of these cases. They're the ones that are going to suffer. When the person is released on bail again and again and again because they're not a specific danger to a specific person and something happens, well, who do they blame? Law enforcement, because they can't go out and arrest them? The state's attorney's office, because we can't prosecute them or we can't hold them in custody? The judge, who do we blame? Because the General Assembly won't be there. They're not going to be sitting there in the courtroom explaining that or explaining to the victim's family when the person's dead. Right? This bill, in all honesty, and I understand trying what they were trying to do, but when you try to do something, you don't know what you're doing, and you do it, and it turns out bad, this is what happens. You're better off to kill your victim to get bail than you are to leave that person alive. Because if you kill the victim and there's no specific threat to a specific person anymore, you're entitled to bail. What a concept. But if the person's still alive and you're still a threat to them, well, then we can hold you without bail. Does that make any sense in the real world? Of course not. But what I was told by people is this legislation is important. We'll pass it and we'll fix it later. We'll address your concerns later. I'm baffled by that. You know, there's questions. I know that the sheriff put out questions. We've had discussions with local law enforcement, what does this mean? And it's hard to digest the 700-page bill that I've gone through. It does take time because every time you read it, then they give you another one, you gotta fix it. Then they change it to another House bill number, then they move it to a Senate amendment, and then they move it over here. Again, not the way that the government should be done. Are DUI offenders going to be arrested? Are we just gonna let them go back on the street to get back in another car and drive drunk again? It says we're not supposed to arrest traffic offenses. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean DUIs? People who are suspended? People who fled from the police? You make that call. They're going to have to make it in the middle of the night. But again, somebody in Springfield you know, doesn't take the time to work these scenarios through, because there are some good things in the bill. There's some things that are necessary. You know, they use big buzzwords like, you know, no more chokeholds. That's great. Except if you're in a life or death situation, you can use deadly force, but you can't use a chokehold. Well, now they've made that change and they realize, well, okay, well, if in the event you feel that it's imminent death, we can allow you to use a chokehold. Okay, great. But that wasn't in the original bill. Right? Again, you have to work these processes through, and to do it in 700 pages in the middle of the night, and as Dwight said, give 45 minutes to read a bill that I'm sure nobody read and vote on it because it's politically correct, that's insane. You know, I hope someday that one of these General Assembly individuals has to look at a victim and say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for what I did because I didn't realize what would happen. The better thing is to fix it before it happens, and we've got some time before it actually goes into effect, assuming the governor signs it. And again, I am not against police reform. I am not against reform for the criminal justice system, but you need to do it the right way, right? This bill is not the way to do it. Take some things from this bill, use them appropriately, discuss them. There's some things that I know that law enforcement was okay with and understood that needed to be changed and had agreed to do so, and that got added on in the middle of the night so it would pass. But again, this is not the way to do it. If you haven't looked at the bill, and again, I don't anticipate you will read 700 pages because nobody else in Springfield did. But if you do and you see some of those concerns that we have with victims, and how am I going to explain to a victim who's constantly harassed on a nonviolent crime, an order of protection violation, and I have to tell them there's nothing I can do because I can't hold that person and I can't stop them because the judge can't hold them? Again, are we going to wait till they're dead? I guess that's a question we'll have to see what happens going down the road. And I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that the situation corrects it and the issues that we have and concerns that we have are addressed. And this isn't just Eric Weiss talking. I've talked to many of the state's attorney's office, both Republican and Democrat. This is not a party political issue. The two representatives that spoke on against this bill from the State's Attorneys Association are Justin Hood and Jim Glasgow, both of which are Democrats. So again, this is not a political issue. This is a public safety issue. So those are my thoughts. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer. Sorry to go on for a little bit, but I thought with how this is going to impact the criminal justice system for decades, it was probably worth 5 minutes of your time.
Appreciate your thoughts on it, Mr. Weiss. It's something that I've heard a tremendous about over the last week or so. I wish that they had spent as much time putting thought into the bill they're going to pass as everyone has been talking about it after it passed. Maybe you would have had a better bill. Mrs. Gilmore, you had a question?
Yeah, thank you. So, Eric, I want to thank you for your comments. And I wanted to just tell the board that this will be on the topic of discussion at the LJL meeting next week, and I've spoken with Sheriff's Office, and I think Mr. Prochaska wants to probably weigh in because it impacts his office as well. It impacts the whole county, so we'll bring it up for discussion, and you know, I certainly want you to be part of that too, Mr. Weiss. So.
Questions on either the comments or the report? Not. I know you have a lot of things to do today, so I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Sheriff, I know you had a follow-up. Yeah. Don't worry, you'll get it. That's right.
Thank you for allowing me to comment. I did not have my notes in front of me when I came up here, so that's why I didn't comment on it. I am against this bill that passed. I am not against police accountability. I, as all the board members, are elected to serve Kendall County and our unique community. House Bill 3653 is being pushed, or was pushed, by elected officials not from Kendall County. We are here to keep our community safe. I don't ever remember an incident, and I've been in law enforcement 30 years, and it's all been served in Kendall County. I never remember an incident that occurred similar to what happened up in Minneapolis with George Floyd and what happened in Chicago with Laquan McDonald. The community, Kendall County has law enforcement executives that hold police officers accountable. We have best practice policies and procedures in place to provide the best possible police service. We investigate our complaints, and we always have. When I was a police chief at Oswego, we investigated complaints even though they were anonymous. We did it to the best of our ability, and that's one part of the bill I don't mind. I don't think that they should live with the officer forever, because you could get someone, if you get an aggressive officer that goes out there and he's putting gang members in jail or drug dealers in jail, we have them all the time inside our jail FOIAing us all the time for information, because they figure out what they can do in order to slow government down. As you heard earlier, we had over 700 additional either subpoenas or FOIA requests in 1 year's time, and that number continues to go up. The two incidents I mentioned did not occur in Kendall County because we will not tolerate that behavior. As a sheriff, in the last 5 years, we've handled almost 52,000 calls for service, either traffic stops, responding to someone's house for a police report. We've investigated 271 incidents of use of force. Now, that is not where a citizen has complained about the use of force. That is where, when we know one of our deputies, they're required to fill out a use of force report, and then we do a investigation on that. It starts at the sergeant level. It goes up to the commander. Ultimately, I see everyone that comes through. In that five-year period, we have 29 complaints against our deputies. In that same five-year period, we had over 25,000 hours of police training. That's an average of about 5,000 hours a year. The reason that I am in here always asking for training dollars is because if you invest up front, you'll avoid things that happen that happened in Chicago and Minneapolis. And I very much appreciate the support that this board has always given the sheriff's office. In my 30 years of law enforcement in Kendall County, I can recall four police shootings, three of which ended in a fatality. All of these shootings were investigated by an outside police agency. Importantly, each incident was found to be justified. In 30 years, there were no riots, there were no protests. Each one of these incidences, the propensity to quickly react or riot or otherwise show a disdain for police did not occur. The process, which I might add took months to complete, was untouched by the public and it ran its course smoothly. There are some good ideas for to improve police service and hold unfit police officers accountable. This bill is not one of them, although there are some good things in it. It eats away at me when a police officer anywhere does something unprofessional. Those actions tarnish all of law enforcement everywhere. I want the police officers held accountable for those actions, thus being removed from our profession. I do not like to see one bad apple spoil the apple cart. I fully support police accountability and improved public safety services. I also support others being held accountable for their actions. It would appear our state legislators only want to hold police accountable and not the criminals who break the laws that law enforcement is sworn to uphold. I talked to four legislators before this came up, and I was told by one legislator, the only one in this area that actually voted for this bill, that it's not perfect, but it needs to get through now, and I'm going to vote with the Black Caucus, and we can fix things later on. When you're out at a call and people look to you to protect them, things can't happen later on. They got to happen right then. And if you do look at this bill, look where it talks about the police use of force. We can no longer use deadly force for somebody that tries to escape from the jail. Think about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff. Coroner.
Morning.
Morning.
It's a lot to follow up on.
I was going to say, it's a lot to follow there.
Well, then I'm going to just jump right back into normal here. In the packet, you should have the December 2020 monthly report, as well as my annual report. I'm assuming that all got over to you. Okay. So in the month of December, we had 37 total deaths compared to December of 2019 when we had 26 deaths. We had two suicides in the month of December, and we have two cases that are still pending. I believe one's an overdose and one's going to be a natural causes once those are all done. We provided a training for Oswego East High School law enforcement via Zoom, so we're able to, everybody is kind of starting to kind of get back into where we naturally used to go out into the community and do a lot of presentations in the schools and stuff, and that was cut down or shut down right away during the last half of the school year. Now we're able to get on and still do those presentations via Zoom, so that's been kind of a nice thing to get back with the community again. And then Chief Deputy Coroner Gotti, he provided a training for the Sheriff's Office for their fit testing that they do for their N95 masks and whatnot that they needed to do. So that's been good. In the annual report, the only thing I want to touch on, I know that we talked about when you did the proclamation for, I think, February 4th for Cancer Day for Kendall County. That's good, and you said that cancer is the leading cause of death in America. In Kendall County, it's the second leading cause of death of people who die in the county. I can't account for people who leave the county and die outside the county. But heart-related deaths, all cardiac-related deaths are leading cause of death. With 92 deaths this past year from that, and 90 deaths with all combined cancers together. We had 8 total COVID-related deaths that occurred within the county. Again, we only count the deaths that happened inside the county, and those were mostly all in facilities, nursing homes, or assisted living areas, other than one that was at a residence, but she was on hospice. Other than that, I mean, you can kind of go through the report. It just kind of lists out all of our, again, I can talk about the fact that our overdose deaths went up significantly. But I think I talked about that last time that I was here, that we just, our overdose deaths definitely went up during the year. But we had, I think, 13 compared to 4 the previous year. So that's more than triple the amount. And then on a positive note, we got this very nice certificate of appreciation from the National Disaster Medical System for, I'm not sure if you know that Levi, who's a chief deputy in my office, he is an emergency management specialist with the federal agency, the NDMS, and he was sent in the early stages of the COVID response, before we really knew anything about COVID. He went to California for 2 weeks last year and served out there. They did they ran a quarantine site, so think like all those people coming in on those cruise ships that had to get off before we knew anything about how COVID was spread or what was going on with it and whatnot. So he went out there and worked for 2 weeks, and it was nice that the National Disaster Medical System recognized that, you know, for 2 full-time people in an office to lose one person for 2 weeks, you know, definitely shows dedication to that response. So it was nice to be, nice to get that. So that's really it.
Questions for the coroner? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your report. Health Department, Rayanne. Good morning.
Good morning. I was just here at Kyle last Thursday. Not a lot has changed since then. We did receive our 500 vaccines for this week. They are already accounted for. They'll be out by Thursday morning. And so we'll have Friday to regroup and plan for the next week. We currently are still serving phase 1A. We have began to open it up into phase 1B and looking to vaccinate our educators as well as elders this week. We know this is probably going to be our largest phase. The most people fall underneath 1B, so this will be a tall task. Everything is running smooth over at our Yorkville mobile clinic, and we're excited just to start getting into 1B. So that's all I have for the health department report. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thanks.
Supervisor of Assessment, Sandy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So we ran into a little issue, so we haven't rolled to Debbie yet, but I should be. We had a little computer glitch that kind of held us up with being able to roll from Board of Review to the county clerk. So that issue has been cleaned up, and we're working on finishing that up. Should be hopefully this week, if not next week. We're still 2 to 3 weeks ahead of where we were last year, so there shouldn't be any issues, any impacts to the
Software glitch or what?
There was an issue with a parcel that came up on what's called an exception report, and we had to actually contact the vendor to get it fixed. So we were able to get that done. It took about a week, but we got it done. And now we're just doing our balancing reports, making sure everything is the way it's supposed to be before we can move on to the next phase. So,
do you have a question, Mr. Keller?
Sent me an email with the CPI for the coming
yes.
budget year. Is there anything you want to add on that? It's 1.4 versus 2.3 if we were to take it. So,
I really don't have any comments on it.
Okay.
That's what the number
just
is. I know it's a little bit less than what it's averaged about 2.1 over the last, 3 years, I think it was. We had two 2.1s and a 2.3 or a 1.9 somewhere in there, I forget. But, yeah, so it's down a little bit from what it has been the last few years. So. But I did share that information with Mr. Kellogg, as he is the finance chairman, so he knows what's going on.
Yeah, we've not used the CPI.
Speaking of that, Mike.
We've not taken the CPI in the years I've been on the board, and for the new members, we'll go through kind of how the PTEL tax works and what the CPI means when we do budgeting. But it's lower than it has been in the past, but hopefully we won't need to use that number at all.
But better than the 0.7 it was that one year.
Yeah, a couple years, 0.7, 0.8, 0.1. So.
Questions for Andy? Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Regional Office of Education. Is Chris on the line?
His annual reports are in your packet. And as always, if you have any questions, feel free to talk to Chris or myself, and I'll relay those questions to Chris.
Okay. It's on page 59 to 64 in your packet. Ms. Gilmer.
So it's in the report, but I just wanted to say that this is the 50th year of the Kendall County Outdoor Education Center, and under other circumstances, we might have done something to commemorate that. But I think anybody in this room that grew up in Kendall County and attended schools has probably spent a considerable amount of time at the Outdoor Ed Center, and they've done a great job over the past 50 years, so just wanted to make everybody aware of that.
Next up, standing committee reports, finance, Mr. Keller.
Make a motion for approval of an IGA with the Village of Oswego, United City of Yorkville, Village of Montgomery to retain the firm Elevate Government Affairs.
Motion by Kellogg.
I'll second it.
Seconded by DeBolt. Mr. Keppel.
There's a copy of the IGA on everyone's desk. Sorry, I got it to you a little bit late, but after the discussion at COW, I communicated with the Village of Oswego, and they were fine with adopting all of these suggested changes from the state's attorney's office. So a clean, updated copy is available on your desk, and it is similar to the one that was in the packet and that was shared online at Committee of the Whole. Some changes, and I thank the state's attorney's office for reviewing it to get some important stuff in there for us.
Thank you. And just as a reminder, on the water portion that we're having them work on, that's something that we've heard that the administration, the incoming administration, might be pushing on soon. Is that right?
Yeah, there's talk of water improvements, environmental improvements, and I know that they're looking to do big projects first 100 days, first 6 months of the incoming Biden administration. So much like we did with the Governor Pritzker coming in, it might be the time to strike. We are ahead of a lot of places because of the fact that we're near the final stretch of a metro study, and then also the cities have together worked on a study for water and to make improvements for that in Kendall County. So even if they're not fully complete, those studies, we can still gather a lot of the information from them to help us put together information to present at a federal level.
Mr. DeBolt?
Yes, and Scott, as we proceed forward, will the other communities in Kendall County be invited into this as well, like Plano, Newark, Lisbon, et cetera?
Yes, if need be, we communicate with them and talk to them. If there's an opportunity, because we're going to have a water consortium that would go, whether it be, you know, other cities included, you know, even maybe outside of Kendall County to get a better price for the resident, we'll certainly have discussions with them. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Ms. Gilmore.
So on the agenda, it doesn't mention any cost. I mean, we talked about it at Kyle, but it's not on the agenda.
It's included in the IGA that we pay 25% of the monthly cost of the, and it's $12,500 a month. So I can do the quick math again.
I think why she's asking is, does the number need to be spelled out?
The contract's for 1 year, and I don't think it needs to be spelled out necessarily on the IGA. The IGA doesn't.
On the agenda?
Correct. It doesn't, you know, cover that cost specifically. It's just that we would pay 25%.
Got it.
Okay, and this was not a budgeted expense, as I understand?
Correct. It was brought forward during the budget hearings. We didn't have time, or the group presenting it didn't have time to talk to the whole board about it before budget discussions needed to happen. There was money set aside in contingency with the idea that this may happen.
So the money is coming from contingency.
Yes.
Which normally we use for emergencies. I don't consider
We don't always use it for emergencies. We use it for a lot of different things. If we have open negotiations with unions, we put money in there to settle union contracts. Things that we may not know an exact number to put in a budget is what we put into contingency. So. Yes, it covers emergencies, but there's numerous things that as we budget and have an unknown or a may or may not happen, we tend to put it in there.
Yeah. I just, the water issue is one thing that's not a problem with me, but the METRA study, I just wanted to maybe let the new board members know there is in existence a Kindle Extension study that is studying the feasibility of bringing METRA out to Kendall County, and they've done quite a bit of work already, and I know the county is aware of this. It seems like we would like to wait until the feasibility is done before we push money into a study to see if we can get funding. They've already, in this study, they've already said it would cost approximately $400 to $500 million just to construct the extension, and an additional $5 million a year needed for operations. So we're talking a lot of money here. Is that even feasible for Kendall County? And I would like to wait before we put money into this lobbyist to see if this is even feasible for Kendall County. So I don't support this.
Mr. DeBolt? I understand your concerns, Judy, of the train issue, but people are still pouring into Kendall County to live. And if we're going to continue to have subdivisions growing, we're going to have water. And I know as an example, Yorkville growing as fast as it did 10 years ago, they had to put more water towers up, and it was pulling water from wells of neighboring housing that was been there for years. And so these developments were pulling the water from the groundwater, and it was hurting these wells. And so Kendall County is not going to slow down. I think it's probably one of the best counties in the state of Illinois, and I'm being biased because I've lived here my whole life.
It's the best, Brian.
Yes, sir. And we're going to have that study, because that piping someday is going to have to be here. And we're going to be prepared for the water. Even if the trains do not come, the housing is still coming. So that's my opinion on that.
Well, and that was one of the big concerns that we have in southern Kendall County in particular. And thankfully, Joliet has now started looking at new alternatives to water. But if they had put another deep well or deep water well in southern Kendall County, a whole lot of folks would have had some trouble with their existing wells, and they would have had to drill down, you know, 1,000 or more feet as well. So it's important for us to get out in front of this, I think, as well. Roll call. Oh, Mr. Keppel.
Just a couple of comments, one of them on funding specifically. There is, of that $400 million that Member Gilmore mentioned, we have $100 million pledged in Rebuild Illinois from the state towards Metro and Kendall County. That is written directly into the law. So that is would be a portion of the money. We assumed that half would need to come from the federal level, and then locally the remainder would get picked up is the thought process to make it feasible. I still don't know how long it'll take or if it will be, but while that $100 million is there, this doesn't happen without that. So that the iron, you know, we need to go after it while that possibility still exists. And then on the waterfront, I just wanted to mention this too is a long-term decision, but it is impacting Kendall County with the growth of it. And this isn't just getting people to go knock on doors of senators and representatives in Washington. They have experts that used to work at the Department of Transportation and different areas of the EPA of the federal government that knows how to help us craft documents and who to talk to and what metrics are important if we're going to be going to the federal government, and also devising a plan on if it makes sense to do a long-term loan for the costly portion of water to get it built out, or if it makes more sense if there's a grant that exists so that the burden isn't immediately put on the residents day one to have gigantic water bills in order to get Lake Michigan water, as an example. So I just wanted to bring up those points that it's they help us strategize it, as well as they know the ins and outs of what gets approved and what doesn't at the federal level and how we can best work to get that goal accomplished.
Going back to the financing part of this, obviously we're not going to be in this, well, we could not be in this for only 1 year. It could be multiple years. So moving forward, where are we going to place this in the budget? I assume it's not going to come from contingency every year.
Keppel or Mr. Kellogg?
So with this, the way this IGA is written is that we have a 30-day out where the county can opt out of the process. The thought I've had, and when I've discussed it with Chairman Greider and Member Kellogg, and I mentioned a little bit at Committee of the Whole, is that every year this should be discussed as part of the budget process for the county. Now that we have our hands around what it's going to cost a little bit better and who the firm is and how the process is going. And then the idea would be to include it either in the county board's budget or the administration budget for the next year. And if it doesn't make it into budget, then we could give the 30-day message to the rest of the communities to say that we, the county, are done with this agreement because it's not in budget next year. It wasn't finalized or ready to go during the budget process, so the decision was made to hold off until everything was done, which happened early in the year. So that's where that piece of it's at. I don't defer.
Mr. Gallag.
I guess with our other lobbyists, we had money coming out of the highway budget because they were focused on the Eldemain and the Collins Road extension. So depending on the focus of this and where we see it landing, you know, I don't know if economic development makes most sense, because that's what we're pushing for, is the expansion of some of these developed areas, or we can look at different options depending on the focus each year. So that's a flexible thing that I like is, you know, if the focus changes with the group that we're hiring, we can figure out a different spot to budget it. And if it doesn't make sense to budget there, maybe we don't need it. So.
Roll call.
Yes.
No.
Can you hear me?
No.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Can't hear you, Debbie. There we go.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Kokel?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sessage?
Yes.
Mr. DeBolt?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
9-1.
Thank you. Motion carries 9-1. Facilities, Mr. DeBolt.
Yes, sir. The Mr. Smiley is here with us as well today. The to go over some of the projects that we are going to be working on with the Public Safety Center, the courthouse, etc., on replacing chillers and HVA systems. And I'll let Jim talk about that, and then we'll talk about the number five after that.
Do you want to make a motion for the first?
I'll make a motion for the first four items. To be discussed, is that how you do it, Scott?
We need to do them individually.
Individually,
yeah,
each
so
one?
Yeah, so just make a motion to approve. All right, I'll do it for the first one, and just I'll make a motion to approve the ACR chiller replacement with new pumps and controls utilizing U.S. Communities contract number USC15-JLPO23, cooperative quote number 30-1006-20-002 with Train US Inc. in the amount of $399,805. And then we can do that for each one.
Got it. Very good.
Thanks.
Second.
Seconded by Kellogg and Mr. Smiley. Go ahead.
I supplied a briefing for the board on this. It was budgeted at $470,000. Once we figured out what exactly we needed, it came in at $399,805. This is for the original courthouse section, which some people may think is relatively new, but it was been there since the mid-90s. This system supplies air conditioning for that entire end of the building. It has a Freon in it that is no longer manufactured. The only way to get that Freon is from reclaiming it from older systems like this. And there's about a $25,000 ComEd rebate that can help to reduce the cost of this project further.
Roll call.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Kokel?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sesich?
Yes.
Mr. DeBolt?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Oh, she carries all eyes. Thank you.
Number two in facilities, the Public Safety Center, MZU5 and AHU6 conversion to a Train water chiller utilizing U.S. Commodities contract, USC15-JLPO23, cooperative quote number 30-10006-20-003 with Train U.S. Inc. in the amount of $386,122.
Motion by DeBolt.
Second.
Seconded by Kokel. Go ahead, Jim.
This was budgeted at $475,000. It came in at $386,122. These two systems serve the southern part of the jail. Again, it has the older Freon in it that is no longer manufactured. Expected life for systems like this are 18 to 20 years. It was installed in 2005, so we're quickly coming up to the expected lifespan of the unit. Again, for the jail, it is 24/7, 365. So these systems run much more than a typical office building does. If we lose the air, these systems go down, we would have no air conditioning for that southern end of the jail.
Roll call.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Kokel?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sesich?
Yes.
Mr. DeBolt?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes. Motion carries, all ayes. Thank you.
Facilities number three, upgrade the existing Western Courthouse HVAC TDC controls with new BAC net DDC controls for units AHU1 and AHU2. In the mechanical room, PCM, and boiler room utilizing U.S. commodities contract, USC15-JLPO23, cooperative quote number 30-10006-20-004 with Train U.S. Inc. in the amount of $78,164.
Motion by Kellogg.
Second.
Seconded by Gangler. Go ahead, Jim.
Again, this one was budgeted for $100,000, came in at $78,164. These controls are just like what I previously mentioned. It's for the original part of the courthouse done in 1994. This is our standard system that we've standardized on for all of our buildings. And in order to maintain the ability to use the systems, we need to upgrade these panels and controls.
Roll call.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Kokel?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sesich?
Yes.
Mr. DeBolt?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Number four, in facilities, upgrade the existing 59 VAV boxes in the original courthouse west section utilizing U.S. commodities contract number USC15-JLPO23, cooperative quote number 30-10006-20-004 with Train U.S. Inc. in the amount of $114,665.
Jim, move.
Motion by Kellogg, seconded by Gangler. Go ahead, Jim.
This one was budgeted at $100,000. It came in slightly higher, $114,665. This, again, is for that western original part of the courthouse. We have experienced problems with these VAV boxes, especially in the wintertime, because they have a what they call a parallel configuration, and this would upgrade these boxes to eliminate that problem in that end of the building. And I'll just note, I provided a summary, and even though this one is slightly higher than the rest, the four projects in total came in at $166,244, less than what I had budgeted for the year.
Yes.
Roll call.
Mr. Kokel?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sessage?
Yes.
Mr. DeBolt?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
All ayes. Motion carries. Thank you.
Facilities number five. Jim has done a great job in managing and repairing the equipment within the county, but some of the equipment, when it's installed new and then you're going back to replace it, some items will not fit. They have to compromise and retrofit items to go in, or maybe new valves, or maybe some extra wiring. And that sometimes is buried in walls or ceilings that you'll have to open up to expose, not knowing it when they're actually bidding the contract. So once they're into these projects, they have to finish them. And if you do not want to have Jim back here and delaying the project 30 to 45 days to get the approval of some work and then ordering the equipment, this is what number five is about, is to approve a $100,000 contingency, which is about 10%, a little less than 10% of the project. In a normal construction, you put a contingency out if you're building brand new buildings or major remodeling, and this gives you a little leeway in case you have unforeseens. Yeah, it doesn't mean they're going to spend $100,000, but it gives Jim the latitude to say, Brian and the board, we got a problem here. You need to take a look at this, and we need to move on. Otherwise, you're going to delay that project, and if we're looking at timetables and schedules, and it looks like we're going to have a lot of work here this year for Jim to manage, he has to have a contingency plan. So with that, to approve a $100,000 contingency fund for HVAC projects with Train US Inc., change orders up to $20,000 approved by both FM Committee Chairman DeBolt and KFCM Director Smiley, for change orders exceeding $20,000 approved by the majority vote of the Facilities Committee or County Board. And
motion by Kellogg.
Second.
Seconded by Kokel. Go ahead, Brian.
Sorry about that. But what that means is when Jim's into these major projects, we can make decisions on things. If they need some extra monies to finish part of that project within the $20,000, if he doesn't need the money, as you all know, Jim has been very conservative in saving money. He's not going to spend it. And I trust that he would do that. So I ask the board to vote on this, to give Jim the leeway and to give him success in getting the project completed on the dates defined.
Thanks, Brian. Mr. Gangler?
Jim, on these large pieces of equipment here, is there a warranties with all of these that take, like, manufacturer warranties? If so, like, how long? And then what's about the time frame on these? Are they more efficient than, say, like, the ones that we've had in the past are, like, 20 years? Is there a longer warranty, or what's basically the lifetime of these chillers?
Standard warranties are normally 5 years for HVAC equipment. The stated normal life of equipment like this is about 20 years, 20 to 25, you know, if they're maintained properly. Some of the problems you run into, you know, unforeseen when they went in originally with the Freon situation, that was a federal mandate to eliminate ozone depletion. R22, majority of systems, most homes and everything else that was done prior to the last probably 8 years have Freon 22 systems installed. So it's a major major issue that we're, you know, eliminating from the county, and these should last with proper maintenance as we have so far, the 20 to 25 years. As far as the efficiency goes, that's what the ComEd rebates are about. I mentioned the $25,000 for the one at the courthouse and to replace the two units at the jail, which are less than 20 years old, but there's a rebate on those of about $2,500 as well.
Mr. Gangler, then Mr. DeBolt.
On the ComEd line, are we gonna be using solar power to power these?
The solar power supplements the ComEd feed. This, what they stated was that it would power about 50% of our needs. Obviously, it's not gonna generate power at night, but I did look up some statistics here before the meeting because I thought people might be interested in that as well. And so far this month, we've generated 55,000 kilowatt hours of electricity, and a quick calculation is about 187 homes that would be powered, and 389 trees would be required to remove the same amount of CO2. So, you know, it's all good news. We haven't gotten our first bill. Our first bill from solar is expected to be February 1st, and, you know, we'll be looking at that along with Chris Childress from Progressive Energy.
And concurring with Jim, what Train's saying about 5 years, when you're asking about longevity of equipment, and the Plano School, or not Plano, but, well, Plano too, but Yorkville Schools, they still have some of the original equipment that they are now replacing, and it is in the 20s. It's 20-plus years old. So with what Jim's putting in, well-maintained, it could well last 20 years possibly.
Roll call.
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sesich?
Yes.
Mr. DeBolt?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Kokel?
Yes.
All ayes. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Mr. Before you leave, Jim, Mr. Kokel?
Just one question, Jim. On the unit, was that the first one for the jail?
Second one.
Yep.
Yes.
Is that directly for the jail? You said it's for the, on the south end?
South end of the jail.
Is that for the jail, or is that for more employees on that part of the building?
Well, it's for inmates for the most part, but it does do the common area hallways and also the master control area down in that section.
And how old is the unit that's there now?
It was installed in 2005, so it's about 15, going on 16 years old.
Gotcha. Because that was on the book to replace a few years ago, wasn't it? Are we always been kind of watching that one?
I've had a 5-year forecast, and you know, I kind of accelerated this because we've had some major repairs that we've had to do to those units already.
I think he's thinking of the ones that we finally did last year. That
ones last year.
I remember there were some.
Yeah, they're like 25 years old.
Yeah, the ones we did a couple years ago replaced ones from the original jail in '92.
Yeah.
But this is specifically for the inmates on that part of the building?
Yes.
Well, they should have a comfortable summer then.
Mr. Keppel.
I just wanted to note on large projects and things we're able to do like this, you'll notice it's in the $1 million range, a little over a million with the contingency, that this is through responsible budgeting and also the SSA and other items that this board has done and previous boards have done, saving money using the public safety sales tax that we don't have to borrow any money. We don't have to do any bonding for a major $1 million project. Not a lot of local governments are able to do that, from talking to some of my, not coworkers, but networking organizations. So I did just want to bring that up when it comes around to budget time. Those discussions happen, that we've been able to do these big projects and stay ahead of having very, very high repair costs because of that smart budgeting in the past. So it's very important to continue doing that.
Highway, may I have a motion to approve an ordinance granting variance to the Kendall County Highway Access Regulation Ordinance for access to Sherrill Road?
So moved.
Motion by Gilmore.
Second.
Seconded by Rodriguez. And Fran, I believe you're on the line.
Yeah, how's my audio?
Loud and clear.
Yes, sir.
Well, you were.
Did you want me to speak to
can
that?
Can you just briefly take us through the what's going on here?
Sure. There was a small residential subdivision on the south side of Sherrill Road, which is technically in Grundy County. And the folks who were involved in that subdivision and some of the folks in Grundy County evidently were unaware that that portion of Sherrill Road is actually maintained by Kendall County. And so when they wanted to get access to these lots, they would have to get them from Kendall County Highway Department. Well, that's a problem because our access ordinance would not provide for such close spacing of those access points. So in order to get access to the four lots on Sherrill, they would need a variance from the county board. And so that's what the petitioner is proposing, these four access points on the south side of Sherrill, and I am supportive of that variance.
No, we're fine. I was just going to...
71. Page 71.
Mind if I speak while he does that? Yeah, I guess I wasn't really excited when this came to the Highway Committee. We need to improve some communications with Grundy County so that we have some input in this on the road that we're supposed to maintain and support. It's already been, all these parcels have already been divided off and a number of them sold, so it's kind of, we're a little too late to the game to really say no without causing a lot of issues. The good thing is the parcel one has access off O'Brien instead of Sherrill, and Fran was okay, he can speak to it, but parcel two, the driveway's far enough from that intersection that he felt it was okay. Just a matter of when other parcels, as we go west on that road, that we have some input in it, because I know the parcel directly to the west of that one has at least two home permits on it already, so we just need to do a little better planning so we don't have 500 driveways in a mile.
That's always one of our concerns on our major through. This is going to be a truck route at some point, and so we don't want to have a whole lot of these, but as Fran has pointed out, there are other homes along this line, and right now this goes right before the road ends, so the impacts would be minimal, and I think there's less than 500 cars a day that are traveling through here as well. Any questions on this one? Roll call.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Hussich?
Yes.
Mr. DeBolt?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Kolkel?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
All ayes. Motion carries. Thank you. Next up, may I have a motion to approve a petition for county aid to build or repair bridge culvert drainage structure from the Little Rock Road District for River Road Bridge over Rob Roy Creek.
Second.
By Kellogg, seconded by Gangler and Scott, or Fran. Can you talk about the bridge fund as well as this specific project and how we stand to lose the money if it's not used?
Sure. The total cost of this bridge is estimated at around $800,000. $200,000 of that is Township Bridge Program money, which comes from the state. We get in line and program these bridges to use that state money, but it lapses after 4 years. So if we don't get this bridge built very soon, $200,000 of that funding will go away. Typically, when these bridges are built, we use that state money, this Township Bridge Program money, and then the remaining costs are split evenly between the county and the prospective township that the bridge will be built in. And so that's exactly what's being petitioned today. This remaining $600,000 in bridge costs would be split evenly between the county and Little Rock Township in order to build this bridge on River Road.
Any questions? Roll call.
Ms. Sussich?
Yes.
Mr. Bolt?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Kolkel?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Motion carries. All ayes. Thank you. Thanks, Fran.
You bet.
Special committee reports. Other business? Chairman's report. I think, are we ready to move into the new, or move back across the street at the second meeting in February? Jim, do you want to mention that real quick?
Currently, that's the plan. It should be for February 19th. The last big thing is to do the training on the new systems. They put out a request to me to get that done on the 26th, so I'm reviewing that with Scott and Matt Kinsey to figure out everyone that needs to be involved with it and try to get that scheduled for the 26th. So barring any unforeseen problems there, should be on track for the second meeting.
Thanks. And then, well, before you leave, the I think you mentioned this at the last, but now that it's in practice a little bit more with the new key cards, how is that going to affect everyone, and that'll give us access to both the buildings?
If you're supposed to have access to both of these buildings, we've put the cards in that way. This also handles the health building, so if you have access to that, you could use that one card for all three buildings now. The eventual plan is for any other facilities we put online with card access, they would also go on the system. So we're trying to streamline it, not to have to hand out any hard keys as little as possible anymore. Probably people that are key, no pun intended, key people for the meetings will still keep hard keys just as a backup, you know, just in case to make sure they can lock doors and things. But yeah, it's been still working through, you know, a few things with it as far as putting scheduling in for the board meetings and the locking down. But right now we're doing some of that stuff manually, but we're expected to work those issues out with this training. So,
Scott?
The back stairwell at the county office building is no longer a public entrance. It started with COVID. The plan, it was one of the security recommendations we got years ago. The plan is to leave that as a non-public entrance that would be for employees, and that stairwell is controlled with key access now to get up and down. That is active, so if you plan on using that back stairwell, please bring your reader. The entrance to the county boardroom that is for board members, which is near that back stairwell, that also has a card reader on it from the newer system, so have your card with you to get in that door on the side for county board members. The other entrance will be the public entrance, which is closer to the elevator. It's kind of in the middle of a hallway to have the accessibility to come in the back of the seating area, just to let everyone know how we're progressing on that front.
In addition, the first and third floors will be locked during public meetings at night, so that was one of the big security issues from our study, that public had access to those areas at night, and we had no way to clear the building before the next day, so those areas will be locked down.
Just a you know, few issues you included, you know, with right now we've got like three different technologies involved, and depending on your access level, you might have to use a hard key, the old key fob, and the new system. But one of the things I'd like to accomplish this year would be to extend the card access to the suites. We did budget some more money this year for further improvements with the facility, so hopefully we'll be able to accomplish that. We'll be discussing that with Brian and Matt and everybody else. So.
Sounds great. And then last thing I wanted to mention, it's sort of facilities related, but it has to do with Yorkville and their help to the health department so that we can get these vaccines in over at 1A and 1B. And I was able to do a walkthrough with Rayanne on Friday to take a look at how the vaccine site is taken place. But one thing that we had talked about is whether or not our facilities would have to help out with that at all, and it sounds like that's not the case. The city of Yorkville is helping, is that right?
Well, we've had to move tables and chairs, and we brought over a automatic dispenser for the hand sanitizers, and you know, odds and ends, they're asking for another 20 chairs, you know, today.
Okay.
And Rand mentioned to me the old-fashioned pull a number off to be served kind of thing, that they're planning on doing something like that. They'll need us to hang on the wall for. So there's miscellaneous odds and ends, but she's told me, you know, with things like that, she's covering them with the city, too, just to make sure that it's okay to do those. And I asked her about cleaning and things like that, and she said the city's taking care of that aspect of it, so it's not hitting our budget,
Okay.
you know, to clean that building and sanitize it.
So along those lines, is that the kind of thing that we can submit for CARES money or funding?
We've already submitted and got approval for all $1,042,000.
And, you know, I'd encourage if board members have time and Wayne want to swing by to see that. It is a pretty good operation they have going there right now as well. So it's worth, I think, taking a look at because that's something that we're getting a lot of questions on, obviously. Public comment? Questions from the press? There is a need for executive session. Can I have a motion to that extent for the purpose of?
I'll make the motion.
By DeBolt, seconded by Kokel. Roll call.
Mr. DeBolt?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Kokel?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers? Ms. Sessage?
Yes.
Motion carries 901.
There's a executive session teams meeting.
We are back in regular. Oh, can you grab the door? I'll let Scott so you can vote.
Get yelled at otherwise.
Yeah, that's right. Make sure there's no one out there. Let the public in. Thank you. May I have a motion to adjourn?
I'll make the motion.
Motion by DeBolt.
Second.
Seconded by Rodriguez. Roll call.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Kokel?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sessage?
Yes.
Mr. DeBolt?
Yes.
All eyes, we're adjourned.